Okay, so good morning or afternoon, wherever you are around the world. My name is Glenn Robertson. This is another edition of the Channel Drop-In. I'm delighted this morning, today, to be joined by Rick Vandenbosch from Channex. He's the CEO and founder of Channex, and delighted, actually, that he's my first guest for the Channel Drop-In in 2022. We're on the 19th of January, so... you know, maybe it's a little late for Happy New Year, but even so, it seems like a little while ago now, doesn't it? But Happy New Year nonetheless, Rick. Great to have you with us today. Thanks ever so much for taking the time to join. Maybe it's over to you. If you can do a quick introduction, who you are, where you are, what you do and why, that'd be great.
Super, Glenn. Thanks a lot. Glad to be here today. Yeah, my name is Rick Vandenbosch, and I'm indeed the CEO and founder of Channex. I think 27 years old and located here in Utrecht in the beautiful the Netherlands. And I think you could say that I've been born and raised in some kind of an indirect channel environment because my father has worked his entire life in indirect channels as well. He used to work at Apple and also have his own companies around indirect channels. So every time when there were people visiting us at home, at the kitchen table, the indirect channel and having partnerships and how to engage them in a proper way was a common topic. And I was always, as a little boy, I was always listening and seeing what they were talking. We're talking about a lot. And then I started my first company when I was 20 years old, where we also worked a lot for retailers and automotive, for example, but also in an indirect channel mode. So with MediaMarkt or with Mercedes or with Ford, where we had both the dealers as the brand, and there already started to notice the difficulties it can bring of doing marketing together, of getting all the data back together. And that eventually led to 3 years ago, I met my co-founders, Henny Jansen, who also has more than 30 years of experience in the channel, and Jens van der Graaf, who is our CTO and has more than 15 years of experience in software development. And we founded Channex at that, I think, almost exactly three years ago. I think the 1st of January 2019 it was.
Terrific. Well, Rick, as I said, you know, it's great to have you with us. First guest of 2022 and welcome. So I think it's a first. I think we have a first today, and congratulations to you and thank you for it. I've never had a guest that has described themselves as born and raised in the channel. I love that. I love that. You got some great pedigree and background there. Family connection, super. So, 27 years old, amazing. Seeing what you're doing with Channex. I have some good information in terms of what it is and what you're doing with it and how successful it's been already. With some amazing brands already signed up. Channex, maybe you can, what is it? Why is it different? Why are you making waves? Why are so many people buying into this? Because, you know, we're the channel, right? We've done everything there is to do. there's only one way of doing stuff in the channel, isn't there? What makes Channex different?
Yeah, I think that's a very good question. And I think that originates to 3 years ago when me and my co-founders got together as well. And we really looked at the channel from our own experience that we had in the years before as well. And I think what we really saw, we were looking at the partner portal, which is a very essential tool for channels to make your to store all your content, to make sure all your administrative processes are located over there so your partners can go there and set things in motion. And I think the way we looked at it was, I think what's the disadvantage of a portal is that it's always depending on the partner to go there, and then it starts doing something. And I think we saw a lot of vendors who were investing a lot of money of getting more partners to the portal or getting more intense use of the portal. And we thought, but hey, can't we turn that around? Why do we focus so much on getting more partners to the portal and instead of getting your portal to more partners? And I think that's where the original idea of Channex came from. What if we can connect the systems of the vendors to the marketing and sales systems of the partners? So, for example, their websites, their social media, their advertising channels, their CRMs, etc. So we can, on one hand, automatically publish the campaigns through the partners to the end user, but also just as important, get back the data. So you get a total overview, both as a partner, that you see exactly from all your vendors you are working with. You see a clear overview of what the campaigns are bringing for you, but also as a vendor to have this total overview together with your distributors over what's happening in the channel.
Okay. So we're talking, are we talking partner marketing automation? Are we talking TCMA? There's an awful lot being talked about. But I'll be careful, but being talked about TCMA at the moment. We'll have a separate discussion on opinions and, you know, theory versus reality in terms of TCMA. But is that where we're at? Is that what we're talking about?
That's definitely what Chenex started as. So okay. Focusing on getting the website content, on getting the social, and we kept expanding from there. But I think we also definitely learned the hard way of the things you face when you want to set up such a thing. I think we focused on two key differentiators compared to what was already in the market when we founded Chenex. The first one is that all the TCMA or all the portals work with an opt-in system. So a partner needs to go there and then say, I want to participate in these campaigns, and then it can be automatically published for them. But we still saw that the participation rate was quite low. So before we started building Chenex, we spoke to a lot of partners. I think we spoke to about 100 partners before we built the first line of code. And I was asking them, like, there are so much available, there are so many assets, there are so many campaigns. But I noticed that it's not used a lot. And why is this the case? And then I think the partners told me, they said, well, we have so many vendors to manage, and they all have great content and they are creating stuff. But I only have maximum one FTE or none of marketing resources. So it's an impossible job besides the marketing I want to do for my own company to also monitor it for all my vendors and have it activated. And that's where we really thought, okay, but what if we turn it the way around? You have a partnership. So we guess you want to do more business together. You want to grow the partnership together. So why not turn it around and make it an opt-out? So to give you an example of how it works, say that a campaign needs to go live next week on Thursday. Then as soon as the campaign is ready, all the partners get a notification. They are notified that the campaign is ready for them. And from that moment, they can log into they see all the assets that are available. They can edit them. They can even reject them, because that's definitely one of the challenges we faced at the beginning. They were like, well, but am I not giving away control over my channels, etc. Very, very solid reasons from that perspective. And yeah, like I said, we also had to learn that the hard way a little bit, where we got like step by step in this order. So they can opt out, but they can also edit it. They keep complete control, but it's automated for them. And I think that really helped us get a lot of traction in the beginning, because usually it's around 10% that partners are participating, and now it's up to 95%. And I think by turning it around, the partners are happy, because it takes a lot of time. It saves them a lot of time, and the vendors are very happy, because they have such more impact and see a lot more reach and also seeing what the results are, because there are these real-time connections with the systems of the partners.
So it sounds like, theoretically, it sounds like by giving the partners more choice and more control of what they participate in, that helps the engagement to go up.
Yeah, absolutely. So, when partners are onboarded, we ask them several questions. So we ask them, what kind of product categories do you sell from the vendor? In what areas do you serve customers? What kind of verticals do you focus on? And those variables, they are like filters that ensure. So when a vendor creates a campaign, they say, well, this is a video conferencing campaign. This is regarding product category video conferencing, focused on the vertical healthcare. And based on the variables that the partners have given at the start, at the onboarding, it's automatically only pushed to the partners that say, yeah, this is what the kind of content that I like to share. So then it's automatically made available, and still they have the control. So they can still say, well, this is not my campaign, or this is not my social. And I think that's definitely, but you, it's super important that they remain in full control, because it's their channels. It's what they have built up in the last sometimes decades.
So they get preference, like a place where, and you said when you onboard them, they have a series of questions to go through. So this is identifying their preferences, identifying what's relevant to them, identifying the types of campaign, the types of product, the types of method of marketing that they are, you know, that they're choosing, that they're placing their preference around. And then, yeah, so once that's done, that's brilliant. So we're putting emphasis on the partner to kind of choose what they want, and then they're automatically opted in, and then they get the option to opt out, which is great. Yeah, that's a nice flip. Shift of emphasis.
Yeah, absolutely. And so when they do nothing, the post will automatically go live next Thursday in this in this example. So that's where you really see the traction coming with a lot of partners.
And so how are the vendors reacting to this? Kind of having less control over what their partners do, and you know, allowing partners to make their own choices rather than just being, you know, told what to do.
Yeah, I think on that specific part we didn't really have any issues yet. I think the main thing at the beginning was that they were like, yeah, this is a little bit too good to be true. You know, we tried such things, and partners don't want to have the connections, etc. I think that was definitely one of the hurdles we had to take as well. And they were right, actually, at the beginning, because it was a lot of work and a lot of talking with partners, and especially with the bigger partners to get them on board, because it kind of felt when we spoke to them like, oh, this is another software tool. I think I heard a beautiful quote from you once, like it's never the software that's not working, or of course it's also sometimes not the software that's not working, but it's hardly the software that's not working. Most of the time it's the people. Yeah. And I think that really is the case with partner software even more, because we can create the most beautiful things, but if the partners are not interacting and not participating, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, and obviously, you know, with the channel, and this might go back to, you know, your father's days in the channel as well, in terms of, you know, in terms of the levels of partner engagement. And yeah, and but partner engagement, there are so many different things around that, isn't there? It is time and resource and knowledge and expertise and inclination, and how does marketing fit with sales, and that level of knowledge between the two, because everything in channel heads towards a number, right? And absolutely. You know, which is why I'm not sure we can afford to be spending loads of time and effort and money on marketing when all we need to do is go out and sell stuff. And then of course you match that up with the fact that digital, social, online, and all the other things that you're talking about here with that channel focuses on, Channex focuses on, and let's be honest, partners, some partners, maybe the majority, are not great at adopting new ways of doing things. I mean, some vendors are not great at adopting new ways of doing things, but partners, I think probably more so, are worse at adopting new things. And yet, over the last couple of years, we've clearly been forced down that road. So, you know, was that somewhat fortunate for you? Was that good timing in terms of you're heading down this entirely digital, social, online route, and then all of a sudden, everybody else is forced down the same route as well?
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. I think that really, especially when lockdown started, etc. Of course, the channel is so focused around events and doing workshops with the partners, going to the partners to build a relationship. And all of a sudden that wasn't possible anymore. And we were still very young at the time. We just launched our MVP in March 2020. And everybody, like I said, it was also a bit that part of too good to be true, together with, yeah, but what are the results? And yeah, we didn't really have a lot of results at the time, because we just started out. And I think that really helped us, where people thought, well, I heard your story before, I thought it was interesting, and now I have a lot of spare budget that's not going to events anymore. So you are absolutely right about that, that really gave us a head start where we can actually build up customer cases, success stories that really helped us in the rest of our journey as well.
Right. I mean, you know, you can never foresee these things, right? But, you know, there sounds like there's a timing benefit, you know, going on there. And why not, right? Well, you know, there's everybody needs a little bit of little bit of fortune here and there. And, you know, we know that I think the world over, the channel has survived and thrived very well through the pandemic, at the same time as understanding and realizing, you know, clearly the devastation that it has caused to so many. And hopefully we're heading out of it now. So where do you kind of sit then on, you know, what's coming next? You know, we've got portals, we've got PRM, we've seen drastic change and digital transformation over the last 2 years. Partners are becoming more preference-based. I think they're becoming stronger. They're becoming more picky in terms of who they work with vendor-wise, in terms of what the partner experience looks like. And, you know, we've had lots of conversations around partner experience in the past. So are you driving change or are you reacting to change in terms of what's happening out there in platform land?
I would like to say driving change, of course.
Very good.
Probably a bit of both as well. I think for us, one of the main focus points right now is what we see, because we have not a lot of data in the channel. I think that most of the data is generated in the portal. So when a partner requests MDF, we know that they are spending more MDF and that they are engaging in that part, or when they are logging into the platform, or when they are logging into, or when they are downloading content, for example. And I think for us, we really see a shift where we go from, we used to call those metrics the partner engagement input metrics. So you know that the partner has done something, but you have no idea what the result was of it. And I think we really want to make the shift to partner impact metrics, where you not, because you have the integrated systems, you don't only see what has a partner done, but you can actually see together what were the results of it. How many end users did we reach? Did they actually participate in these campaigns? And when you are active with social selling, are they actively participating in that part as well? But also definitely on partner MPS, for example. What do they think? What's the sentiment amongst your partners? What kind of feedback? I think that's really the next step where we need to go as the channel, where we can really focus on the results and the impact, like the partner engagement impact metrics. In our opinion, those are the things that are leading to the output you want. So to building your partnerships together, to more revenue, et cetera, more pipeline, et cetera. And I think that's for us one of the main focus points right now.
It's really interesting, you know. But you know what we do at Pure Channels. We're an agency. We're a service offering, and we see this all the time, and we see various different versions of it in terms of, you know, ROI. If we spend this much money with you, how many leads are you going to give us? You know, ROI. What are we going to get at the end of all this? How's it going to work? It's kind of, you know, we have that conversation a lot, and there are so many different things that can affect ROI, right? You know, one of them being you need to know what it is you're measuring first before you kind of work out what the results are going to be. But then the other side of it, and again, you know, unbelievable timing, is that with the switch from face-to-face events, conferences, exhibitions, meetings, which have always been notoriously difficult to quantify and to measure the results and impact, now that it has been forced online, we've got all the reports we need at hand, right? So if you are going to spend X amount of money on a certain activity, there's a lot more metrics and stats and results that can be gleaned from that, I think, is my first point. The second point that leads on from that is that vendors are constantly wanting to measure stuff. Of course they are. The amount of MDF that gets wasted, that gets unapplied for and gets left on the table is clearly very, it's huge, isn't it? It's
absolutely
billions and millions of pounds. So on one side you've got, let's measure the metric, and the next point you've kind of got, well, let's define lead, right? Because everybody's going, we need leads, give us leads. And our partners say that we don't give them enough leads and we need to be generating leads. So we need to define what a lead looks like. But then notoriously, we find that actually partners and disties and vendors, to be fair, are not really very good at that in-between bit. The marketing people want to generate demand. Yeah. And the salespeople want to sell things. But in the middle bit there, you've got this nurture piece, right? Which is about,
absolutely.
You know, points of contact, registrations of interest that then lead on to the next bit and the next bit and the next touch point. So are you dealing with that middle bit, that nurture piece that turns maybe a registration of interest into a conversation starter for a salesperson?
Yeah, it's a crucial part indeed of the funnel. And that's another thing we also learned the hard way. At the beginning, when we started Chenix, that was completely our proposition. So we are Chenix, our platform is going to help you generate leads. And we had the first customers, they told us we have generated more leads than we ever did before in a quarter. But then, of course, the logical next question was like, okay, now we have so many leads. What are we going to do with it now?
Yeah.
And also because the leads are generated on a local level with the partner. That's another thing we find very important. When it's generated through their social, their website, it immediately gets the tech of the partner and nobody can change it because it's the partner's lead. And that should be the way as well. But the partners also reacted a little bit where they were like, yeah, but yeah, I called them and they didn't necessarily want to buy stuff immediately. And we were like, no, it's like a bit more up of the top of the funnel where it's first a white paper webinar. So we really learned that we needed to adapt quickly as well. So I think both indeed nurturing the lead, you have several tools, of course, you can do it with marketing automation. But I think also a trend that we see a lot is doing retargeting, where every time when somebody does a step in the funnel, they go a bit deeper. So they downloaded the white paper, then we retarget them until they do a webinar. And from the webinar, we keep retargeting them until they want to make a demo call or something, something like that. Yeah. So I think that's definitely crucial because partners were, to be very honest, they were not necessarily really happy with it. At first they were like, whoa, these are so many leads. But after that, they were like, yeah, it's so many leads. It also cost me a lot of time to follow up on them. To be honest, I'm not really comfortable with having like open conversations, not immediately about the product. Yeah. So that was definitely the next step. Like, okay, we need to help them to build the complete funnel. And of course, you know a lot more about building the funnel than me. But
that's the bit, isn't it? Yeah, exactly. And I say that's the bit, isn't it? And that's why I mentioned in the very first the first point, it's about definition, isn't it? It's about the definition of what constitutes a lead and whose definition are we working to, right? Because, you know, some people might think that downloading a white paper is a lead. They're interested. They clearly want to buy stuff, right? But that's a quantity play, isn't it? This is like, how many downloads can we get? How many clicks can we get from these people? And as soon as they've done that, right, hand it over, that's a lead, they're interested. But the important bit is that nurture bit, isn't it? Because, you know, we're talking about, you know, the need for 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 sometimes touch points before anybody wants to engage in a conversation. We're seeing massive trends, much more and more, you know, 70-80% of the buyer's journey is done online. You know, they do their own research first. They want to download a white paper, of course, but that doesn't mean they specifically want to buy anything tomorrow. So that nurture piece in the middle is so, so, so important. And traditionally, as you've just identified, traditionally the bit that partners, salespeople, whoever it might be, are not really keen on doing, right? Because it's additional effort to get to a next point. And this is where I think it's a nurture environment that sales and marketing really, really need to come together and collectively own, you know, because the marketing bit we can do the demand gen, we can generate that demand, we can gather a whole load of registrations of interest, but then we need to go on a journey to get towards the sales piece. And the sales people kind of need to just come back a bit and go, hey, look, you know, let's see where we can help here. We meet in the middle at this nurture phase. And then when it's ready, we'll take it on and thank you very much. But typically we're still conflicted, aren't we? There's still a divide and we need to, I think it's the nurture pool where sales and marketing need to come closer together.
Yeah, you're so right about that. I think from that perspective, we have seen it as well in all the partnerships that we have with vendors, with distries, the ones where sales and marketing are both involved and both working on making it a success, and the same accounts for the partners. It's so much more, the results are so much better. And I think another thing that we do at Chenix, if we give partners a connection score. So how well connected is a partner to your brand? And one of the things we included is that they need a marketing user and a sales user. Brilliant. Because what we've learned, if you don't have both, when you don't have the marketing user, they won't review the content. And sometimes they can't even connect their socials. And if you don't have the sales user, nothing will happen with all the leads that are generated or any other activity, training, et cetera, you want to share with them as well. So that's, we made that an integral part of, because we noticed also from that perspective how important it is, not just on the vendor and the distri side, but definitely at the partner side.
So I mean, this is great. I love it. Are we seeing a, if we look at what's happened in the market over the last few years, and when I say few years, I kind of mean, you know, 10, 15, and PRM has gone crazy. You know, there's more and more vendors coming into the PRM space. There's more and more investment coming into the PRM space. I still think there are huge gaps in terms of what PRM vendors are providing for partners, which is massively affecting uptake and engagement. Nonetheless, it's a huge space. And I think we've kind of come through this cycle of putting everything in the PRM as much as we can, chuck it all in. And then if we put more stuff in it, then it's obviously better, which justifies the investment, right? But I think what you're doing, and I've seen other examples elsewhere, I'm just wondering, are we seeing a shift maybe, or a slight move, or just a dip of the toe in the water of more kind of niche specific activity based platforms that maybe we can have our PRM in the background, but actually specific to this task, we need this because it does it better. Specific to this task, we need this because it does it better. I mean, we see it a little bit with MDF in terms of payment mechanisms and that sort of thing. But are we seeing that? Are we seeing a slight shift away from the all-encompassing, all in one place, do everything and sometimes brackets overcomplicated into a for this activity, go here. For this activity, go here. Or it just seems it might be that way. What do you think?
Yeah, I think on the one hand, indeed, you very good point, by the way. But I think on the one hand, you really see still vendors, of course, they like it the most to have everything in one place. So it's all connected. But I think if you look, we are also a SaaS company, of course. If you look at the SaaS world and how quickly everything is evolving, the biggest companies, the largest companies in the world, they are all built with an open API. You can connect everything you want. So you can really create kind of like your own puzzle. Just look at like a marketing tech stack, for example. I like Calendly the most to book my meetings, and I like Teams the most to do my Zoom calls, et cetera. And you fit them all in until you have like the ultimate tech stack. And I think definitely for the channel, it would be the best way, because there's always particular parts of software that's better from another perspective. But on the other hand, I think talking from my own experience, for example, we just moved everything a year ago to HubSpot. Yeah, it's super relaxed. Everything is in one system. Everything is connected to each other. So I think both really have their advantages and disadvantages. But for example, I can tell you from my personal experience, a lot of vendors that are working with us, they use us as an add-on to their portal. And they really see it. Yeah, I have this portal. I have all this stuff in it. And with Genex, I can automatically bring it to my partners, and I can involve the distributors. I think that's also an important part to notice.
We've built from the ground up.
Everything was always around thinking, but the distributor plays a key role in that part as well. So we need to include them, because otherwise you can never do this with your unmanaged partners, which are the majority of your partners oftentimes as a vendor.
Yeah. I like where this is going. So if we think about it, we've kind of got, hey, look, over here, the option to have everything in one place, you know, including everything that you need from the PRM vendors, that exists. If, however, you want PRM plus niche focused dedicated platform, that's starting to exist now as well. So I guess where we're kind of going is, actually, regardless of what your preference is, we are going down the road of hyper preference, aren't we? We're going down the road of super choice, actually, regardless of where your opinion lies. You know, if you want it all in one place, that's available. If you want dedicated, focused activity and solution, then that's actually available. You want them combined together, that's available too. So is that where we're going? Has the last maybe 2 years of accelerated digital transformation given us more of a consumption model that says, hey, I want to make my own decision. I want to choose. I want to go where I want to go based on the research that I'm doing. And so long as all of the options are laid out in front of me, I'm happy to go based on preference, research, information, trust, confidence, and those types of things, rather than there only being one thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think within now in 2 years, you will have the choice. So I think indeed you are definitely right. Everyone will have its own preference. every vendor, but I think you can either choose to have the all-in-one, because you were right at the beginning, there's a lot of money flowing into it, a lot of development, so all the software will get better eventually. But you can also really choose, probably from the SaaS perspective we were talking about, that you can really create your own ultimate solution that it actually serves your specific needs.
Yeah. Brilliant. Okay. So Rick, I mean, I've really enjoyed this conversation. It's a lovely one. It's kind of like a mix of tech, channel, partner solution, preference, marketing, lead gen, demand gen, nurture, automation, people, you know, all the things that, you know, as you can tell, I love talking about. I wish we could do much more of it. But what I'd like to ask you is for any closing comments, is there any one thing, you know, or two things or three things that you think the channel needs to look out for in maybe the coming year? You know, 2022, is that the year of is that the year that things are going to start happening again? Where do you see things going? What, first question. Second question is closing comments on Channext and how people can get involved.
Yeah, super. I think one of the main things is something you also talk a lot about, is really putting that partner experience first. And this all doesn't, that's not just from the experience part, but also requires a bit of a mindset shift with the vendors as well and the distributors, where, you know, it's an open market. So I think we need to think of serving the partners in the best way without really trying to create siloed environments where it's only about yourself, for example. And I think that's something really believe in as Channext. So we are, so to say, we are an open marketplace. So a partner only has one Channext account, but from there can manage all their vendors, because that's so much easier for them than having a lot of different portals on that part. So I think that's really an important part. I think another thing I think is completely going to change is something you are also launching in a bit, I think, but the two partner communications, it's such outdated. We are always joking about it. Well, let's spam the partners with emails internally. Here, and that's still the only thing that a lot of, I think almost all vendors use to communicate to their partners. So I really see a shift over there as well. I think those are two of the main shifts we'll see in the upcoming year.
Very good. Right. So Rick, the second part of the question then in that case was, as we come to a close, firstly, thank you hugely for taking the time and joining me today on the channel drop-in. How can people get in touch? How can people take advantage? How can people find out more information about you, your team, and this, what sounds like, you know, brilliant new platform, Channext?
Yeah, super. I also really enjoyed it, Glenn. So thank you for the invite. And if you want to get in contact with Channext, you can either follow us on LinkedIn. We are sharing a lot of content there as well. Go to channext.com, or you can also directly message me. My email address is pretty simple, rick@channext.com. So happy to hear more about it.
Perfect. So we're channext.
Yeah, channel, right, but then ending on XT instead of the L.
Perfect. Rick van den Bosch, thank you ever so much. You are CEO and founder of Channext. This was another edition, in fact, the first edition of the January 2022 channel drop-in. I'm Glenn Robertson of Pure Channels, the channel agency. Thanks ever so much. More coming very soon. Same as you can keep in touch with us via all of the usual methods, LinkedIn, Twitter, or email us, or go to the website purechannels.com. Good to see you. Thanks ever so much. Cheers, Rick, and we'll be in touch again soon. Thanks. Goodbye.
Thank you very much.